The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Rick Lober, Vice President General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. Rick, how are you?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me.
Now, you pick up a newspaper, you go to the internet, you see all these stories about, you know, satellites and satellite transmissions. And even in the Washington, D.C. area, you pick up the Washington Post. It's owned by this guy named Bezos, who's involved in satellites. And then all the young people are talking about electric cars and Tesla. And this guy, Elon Musk, is involved in satellites. So I thought it'd be good to bring in someone who's got nuts and bolts experience with satellites and talk about how satellites can impact my listeners, federal IT professionals. But before we dive into the subject of satellites and managed services, Rick, tell us about your background, please.
Yeah, I've always had an interest in technology. I grew up during the so-called space race, and it's great to see that being revived now and getting young people interested in space and communications. Always had an interest in radio, so went to school as a electrical engineer, got a master's degree, and then came out to this area for my first job, working on some very sophisticated radio design for intelligence purposes. Then moved out to San Diego for about a 10-year stint. At that point, I was running some smaller business units in communications-related technology, mostly high-speed data links off of airplanes and unmanned vehicles. And then my wife and I kind of missed the East Coast, particularly the Chesapeake Bay, because I do a lot of sailing out here, and opportunity came up at Hughes Network Systems to run their defense division.
You had a good background, and you didn't really emphasize that, but I'm going to emphasize, you went to a real good school in the Midwest, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. A lot of good folks have come out of that school in engineering.
Yeah, it's always been a top five engineering school, and people like Mark Andreessen with the internet browsers, a lot of innovation out of the school, and a lot of hands-on practical knowledge, which was kind of the approach I took with what they call RF communications or radio frequency communications. And that's what led me into becoming a design engineer for a couple years, and then really kind of moving up the chain to project management, program management, P&L management, and then running business units.
Last week I was on a conference call with a professor at Stanford University in the engineering school. And he kind of looks down on other engineering schools because there's so many startups that come out of Stanford. And I see startups coming out of Stanford. My daughter studied engineering at UVA. And the joke there is that that's what you do before you go to law school. You get an engineering degree from UVA. But I think the school in the Midwest really is where the rubber hits the road. This is real practical application for much of the technology we use every day. A lot of the engineers that school produced are working behind the scenes in satellites and in mobile devices and in the cloud and Amazon Web Services. It's really a great school, I think.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten schools in general have always had a lot of emphasis on communications, and you're seeing the startups at Illinois also. It's a little bit more in the middle of the farm field, so it's not quite Palo Alto, but there are incubators there now and a lot of innovation coming out.
I think if you're an engineering student at Stanford and you're not involved in the startup, you look down upon. It's like, oh, there's Rick over there. He's just studying hard. It's not that good. So you wound up working for Hughes. Why'd you choose Hughes, and where do you see Hughes in this marketplace?
Well, Hughes is a great company, very, very deep technical roots. And although I had done a lot of work in military communications, satellite is its own special world, a very tight community, some very specialized fields. So I was pretty intrigued by that. Hughes, typical story, started as a garage in Rockville. Designing what we call modems, modulator demodulators. It's part of a radio. And did some military work, but really wanted to move They actually spun out of CompSat, wanted to move more into commercial satellite. They saw that as a booming field. So started as an equipment designer as a company called Digital Communications Corporation. Was ultimately bought by Hughes, the Howard Hughes
company.
Doing
the real EE work, wasn't it? Yeah.
They were
real
you know, all engineers, and they did it all. And there was a very similar culture with Hughes Corporation, which was innovation and doing the right thing for the customer, and a lot of you know, high tech advancement. So we were fortunate to be able to keep the Hughes name. Through the years. Today we are owned by EchoStar Corporation, so we have the fourth largest fleet of satellites in the world. We are still a very large equipment manufacturer. In fact, we produce 40,000 terminals a month in a fully robotic factory in Rockville, Maryland. We also are a large managed service provider. We have over a million three consumer subscribers. We do big box stores, gas stations. You use us every day, lottery tickets for credit card transactions, voice over IP, video signage. We apply that also to the government. And now we're also launching satellites. We have a couple of our own up there that are very specialized, what we call high throughput communication satellites.
So you take that soup to nuts experience, everyone from the EE guy designing the board all the way up through managed services in the satellite itself. So that gives you a broad, broad background in the commercial world to apply to our federal audience.
Yeah, and that is really the goal of my group and some of the other government groups in these satellite companies to take that commercial technology and apply it to the DOD. And it's important, you know, at the height of the conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, 10, 12 years ago, about 80% of the satellite bandwidth being used by the military was being purchased from commercial organizations. So it's important that it's there.
Earlier you mentioned RF radio frequency, and when I think about satellites, that's the signal I think of that comes out of satellites, RF radio frequency, and then it normally gets translated into IP. Is that a good way to look at it?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. We hear a lot about the digital world and internet and that type of thing, but it if you're talking about communications, at least communications through the air and even optical communications, it involves radio frequencies, and then we convert that and do a lot of processing to enhance the signal and get the information to the end user.
And there's all kinds of applications in our world, whether it's using a device to find out where you are, if you're lost or not, to unmanned aircraft, what some people call drones, to the real serious world of command, control, communication, computers, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, or I think it's C4ISR, which really what the listeners of this show are interested in how can Hughes help them accomplish their agency's objective. That gets tough.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the longer acronyms within the DOD, but it's a very, very critical one, and that is situational awareness, making sure that you know what's going on around you through intelligence that is being communicated to a group of soldiers on the ground or even the individual soldier. So that involves really all radio communications, airborne vehicles that are doing video surveillance, and the technology, particularly in our case, satellite communications, that brings that video down to the ground and down to the commanders.
Let's take a little break. We can come back. I want to focus on this word that has a lot of application for people in the special services, people in the Pentagon, and this word is resiliency. And it means a lot of things to a lot of different people. And let's get back and talk about resiliency, satellite services, and what Hughes means to our listeners as far as providing that resiliency. We're going to take a break from Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy. We've been speaking to Rick Lober, Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rick Lober, Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. We're talking satellites. Right before the break, I brought up this big fancy word of resiliency. I guess emotionally, you're a resilient person if you can take a failure and bounce back. When I think of my car, a resilient car can go through a puddle and keep on going. Now, resiliency in satellite communications may be a little different, huh?
Yeah, resiliency, at least in the DoD aspect, and I think in general, is just the ability to keep the communications channel up and going no matter what. And that might be interference. We see a lot of that today. Much of that is unintentional interference. I think as some of the adversaries, we go into more sophisticated areas, we may see more intentional type jamming. So you want resiliency against that. Satellite is not there anymore. You want resiliency in that regard. So one of the things that commercial offers, the commercial industry to the DoD, is that there are many satellite constellations up there, and you can kind of hedge your bets with that regard. And so Hughes does that also today. We also do a lot of terrestrial communications, satellite communications for government agencies for backup. A lot of people think that they may be getting resiliency by going to one vendor that offers fiber services and a second vendor that offers connection services. And you get a fiber cut, there's a good chance that both companies are over that same fiber. So it's nice to have satellite communications as a true backup resilient mode.
I think the story coming out of this town is that at 9/11, they looked at the backup system of the Pentagon, and there was a backup system okay. They had a primary and a secondary, and they both exited the building from the same place, which probably not best practice from an engineering perspective, but everyone likes resiliency and duplicacy and everything else. When I studied satellites, I come across this term HTS, high throughput satellite. What does that mean for our listeners?
Okay, what that means basically is much more capacity per satellite. When satellite communications started, you needed about three satellites to cover the globe. They covered about 120 degrees each, and you would send your signal up, and it would come back down. A satellite is basically a almost a reflector in the sky, not literally, but it's what we call a transponder. The signal is received and retransmitted back down to the ground. As we've gone to higher capacity satellites, we've done the same thing the cellular industry did, in that we are making these satellite beams smaller and smaller and smaller. So instead of being a third of the Earth, a satellite beam may only be a couple hundred miles. And that forces us to what we call a managed services type model that I think the DoD will be moving to in the next couple years, because you know, just going out there trying to buy bandwidth on a satellite and setting up your own network is going to be more difficult on these high throughput satellites. So just like commercial industry uses managed services, I think we're going to see the DoD doing the same.
I kind of coined a phrase a while back, instead of software as a service, this could be satellite as a service. Is that what you're looking at, SAS?
Yeah, it's really no different than your cellular system or your internet provider at home. It's a certain amount of throughput with a certain service level for a certain amount of money per month.
Now, if you look at let's say different organizations in the federal government, maybe military organizations, they're all over the world. They're all over the place, all kinds of places. And not only that, but they're moving. So you get something like a ship, you get something like a human being. They could be moving all over the place. And so it's not just resilient communication. You got a resilient communication on a moving target, or something called communication on the move. Is that it?
Yeah, comms on the move is what we call it. And basically that is anything from a airplane to a ship to a vehicle, or even a soldier on the ground who was on the move and being able to maintain that communication. Hughes started with that with the commercial airline industry. We service all of Southwest Airlines through a company called Global Eagle Entertainment. So we're managing about 750 airplanes right now, getting internet service to the people in that airplane. And it's no different for the military. Troops on the move, commanders on the move want to stay connected while they're in the air. So we have a lot of emphasis on that in my group right now.
So high throughput satellites, there's something called at the other end called a VSAT. So there's HTS and VSAT, just throwing out these terms here, just trying to get a better idea. So something real small, I think. Is that what a VSAT hub is, a VSAT terminal?
Yeah, VSAT is a very small aperture terminal, and actually Hughes had a lot to do with inventing that. If you remember in the days of early satellite TV, you would see these very large dishes, you know, out in the middle of somebody's lawn. A lot of jokes about that. Today, it's a much smaller dish. It's typically less than 3 feet. That's what we call very small aperture. And actually, the first enterprise that started with that and took a lot of the gamble was Walmart stores, when Sam Walton had a vision of connecting all his then rural stores together for inventory and general communication needs. So Hughes came up with the VSAT, and today we're producing about 40,000 a month in our factory in Rockville, Maryland.
Boy, on Jeopardy, I'd lose that question. Really? Okay, the answer is, what company in Rockville, Maryland is producing 40,000 of these a month with a robot? Wow, that's incredible. It's right in our backyard.
Yeah, it's you know, you hear a lot about offshore production, but our factory is really amazing to see a robotic assembly line doing some, you know, very sophisticated, very high frequency RF circuitry, you know, on a robotic assembly line at over 40,000 a month.
I mentioned Cameron Gorgonpour, and when I had him in the studio, we talked about innovation, and I said, so what you're telling me is that acquisition is putting the no in innovation? And he said, well, yeah, there's got to be something we got to bring up too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest issue facing the DoD today is the acquisition system. And Hughes, our slogan is innovation delivered. We have some very, very deep roots in satellite and communication technology in general. And there are some customers that we can work with very, very quickly, usually smaller organizations that can adopt this technology. But for major programs today, the acquisition cycle is still 5 to 7 years, and it's the same cycle whether you're buying a multi-billion dollar aircraft carrier or you're buying a communication system. So I think it's making it tough for the DoD to keep up, particularly in the area of communications.
So you look at cloud services, you look at rapid change. It looks like there's going to have to be some innovation on the acquisition aspect of this technology too.
Yeah, I think, you know, communications is just as you replace your cell phone every couple years and it's throwaway or recycled. I think the military is going to have to go to that model. And that's a very tough concept, to think that you're going to buy something and actually recycle it or upgrade it in a very, very short time. But the truth of the matter is the military probably led in communications and innovation up to probably the early 80s. And with the advent of the cellular system, commercial industry really took over. So for the military to keep up, they're really going to need to leverage commercial communications and figure out how to do acquisition much quicker than they do today.
I was driving through Arkansas with my wife a couple weeks back, and I texted my daughter Brittany, and I said, going through Conway, Arkansas, are you jealous? She texted me, I hate Arkansas because it's too flat. Now, that's what I call communication on the move. But I imagine communication on the move applies to unmanned vehicles as well.
Yeah, the UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles, or what the media likes to call drones, is a very important aspect of the battle today. Mostly it's video surveillance. And because some of the larger UAVs can fly a long way and pass mountains and that type of thing, they're what we call their line of sight communications tends to drop off or be blocked. So we use satellite communications to extend the range of these UAVs and get the signal back to the commander on the ground.
And what that enables is real-time decision-making. I mean, all this technology, all these engineering degrees, what it means is that a commander can make a decision.
Yes, within seconds. So it's really important that that satellite communication link stay up and does not blink, as they call it, because you want that video feed continuously streaming down.
I've done shows on enterprise architecture, and I get dazzled with charts and everything else. But there's architecture involved here, and a lot of times it's open systems architecture for many of these designs. Is that right?
Yeah, there is a move to that, and it's good to see, particularly to open up these interfaces between different elements of the communication system, say between the radio and the antenna. When those type of interfaces become proprietary, it really forces the military's hand to stick with one vendor in what could be a very low-cost upgrade of a radio being forced to change out the whole antenna system or that type of thing. So we are working with the DoD on open industry standards help keep costs reasonable.
Yeah, we could say hashtag secure and hashtag flexible accomplishes both of those. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about satellites and managed services. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Rick Lober, Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back with Rick Lober. He's Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. Rick, we've been talking about satellites and technology and throughput and dishes and small dishes and real time and UAVs. How do you keep up? I mean, how do you keep up with all this technology? Are there blogs or the podcasts, or how do you absorb all this new information?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot out there, and for me, I enjoy doing presentations, and that kind of forces you to get smart in a couple areas, get up there and talk about it in front of a group of people. I also stay pretty close technically in leading the group. It's important, I think, for some of the decision making. So, but social media, as you say, is becoming an important factor. So you can find a lot of great articles on LinkedIn, in particular, I think, is a very professional site. Twitter and general internet web searches.
Your world focuses on a lot of trade shows. I think you had Satellite 2017 in the spring, and these are huge satellite shows where a lot of people literally from all over the world to get a chance to sit down and learn new things and talk about technology. So trade shows are kind of important for Hughes, I would think.
Yeah, our big show really for the whole industry is held March every year downtown Washington, and it's a good opportunity to get with the customer base and also get with partners. There's a lot of partnerships in the satellite industry in the different aspects of it, and also to make presentations to get the information out there to educate the community on what's happening.
Between now and next March, who knows what's going to happen? New products, new ways to handle signals, all kinds of different managed services. There's two different things, many things. And one aspect that might have innovation is this communication on the move, COTM.
I think communication on the move, you're going to see, I mean, really all the commercial airlines are going to be connected very shortly here within the next year. You're already seeing it on cruise ships. So it's important that our military have the same level of connectivity. I mean, right now, I believe that a typical aircraft carrier that could be a couple thousand people is only getting maybe 25 megabits per second down to it. You know, right now, our consumer internet, we're doing 20 megabits per second down into the home and 3 megabits per second up for a very reasonable price. And we're actually picked by the FCC as a number one provider in meeting our speeds. So same thing with airborne. You know, you probably can get better communications in some areas on a commercial airline flight than you may be able to get on a military flight.
So we're 2025?
Trying to change that. Yeah.
What are you guessing for 2025, or what kind of speed?
Oh, I think you're going to see on the consumer side, us probably pushing towards 100 megabits per second or more.
What are they getting airlines now?
The airlines, I think they started somewhere about 30 megabits per second down into the plane, and that'll increase to over 100. A little bit different, you know, an airliner, you're usually wanting to get a lot of data into a plane because you've got a couple hundred people there, where a UAV, it's flipped. You want to get a lot of data out of that platform. So the architecture tends to change a little bit.
So you talk about latency problems, you talk about input and interesting. So for the high throughput satellite, this would take this number and just make it crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's giving us just almost an order of magnitude, over an order of magnitude increase from where it was just a couple years ago. And I think that's going to going to continue. Also, you're seeing an explosion of what we call LEOs, low Earth orbiting satellites. We're working very closely with a company called OneWeb that will be launching 800 LEO satellites that will be going around the globe and communicating to signals on the ground. And actually, as those things move around the globe, they'll be handing off that signal about 10,000 times a second. So it's a challenging ground system for us, but we're well along the way. There is military interest in that system, and there's also a lot of commercial interest to really connect up people in the world that just don't have internet service today.
Now, LEO has nothing to do with astrology. LEO is low Earth orbit.
Low Earth orbit, right. And yeah. Most of the satellites, you have both. GEO, which is geosynchronous, they tend to stay at the same point above Earth, and then LEO that are moving along, and you can actually see those at night on a clear night.
LEO, GEO, all kinds of innovation here, new throughput speeds, changes. So what about the acquisition process and keeping up with these changes and even knowing what's available?
Yeah, again, that's, I think, the challenge. We are seeing some innovation right now. The Air Force is looking at their next generation satellite, what we call the wideband global satellite, and doing an analysis of alternatives. And I think it's been a great move on their part to get commercial industry involved, even with funded studies on what commercial industry can do to help inform that decision. They're also using other vehicles for acquisition. There's something called OTA, or other transactions allowed, which is a fairly streamlined process for acquisition. So I think things are improving, and certainly there's a lot of emphasis at the top to improve that acquisition process.
Yeah, OTA is kind of a tricky concept, I tell you. If there is a workshop that should be presented at Satellite 2018, it might be a workshop on OTA because people are confused about it and don't know exactly what it means and how it applies to them. And it implies a certain amount of flexibility, but within a structure, it's difficult to even explain.
Yeah, it has its complexities. There is an organization now called the C5 Consortium that specializes. We are part of that and specializes in communication technology and tries to help move this along. But generally, you do a very short white paper with a very rough price. If they like that, they turn that into a proposal and cuts the time down quite a bit.
But there's a lot of ifs and ands and asterisks and special and
right.
It sounds nice, but you know there's the rules to play by, kind of difficult. Many of my listeners are familiar with managed services. They have someone manage your data center or manage going in and out of it. There's also called managed security services. So you do both of those, don't you? Managed services involving with satellite transmission. Is that right?
Right. We take great pains to make sure we run a very secure network. We use commercial crypto, which for a lot of our credit card transactions, that type of thing. For the government networks, we'll use military crypto. But it's not just about making it secure in that regard, but it's also making sure that the communications is resilient. Hughes runs many of the nation's lottery terminals, and when Powerball is running at $1 billion, our fines are extreme if that network goes up because of the amount of revenue a state will lose. So we can switch network operation centers, we can switch transponders, switch technologies within this network, and we've had some military visitors recently that are pretty intrigued by that.
Goes back to the word resiliency. I mean, in the commercial world, you get a financial penalty if you're not resilient. In the military world, people die. I mean, it's that simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an important aspect, particularly in today's world. I don't know where we would be without our internet connectivity.
And resiliency, too. Let's take a break and come back. Talk more about managed services. Talk more about Hughes and where you see yourself in the federal government. And maybe get the crystal ball out and say, well, you know, what's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years? I mean, are there really constellations of satellites out there? Are there really thousands of pieces of debris floating around out there? And what about topics like interference and satellites? And what does it mean for Joe Sixpack, who's thinking about maybe getting a drone? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Rick Lober, Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rick Lober, Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. We're talking about satellites. We're talking about high throughput satellites, big satellites, small satellites, constellations, managed services, all kinds of fancy pants acronyms. And I know there's people going to be listening to the show, and the Redskins are playing, and they're worried about Kirk Cousins, and they're also online, and they may want to learn more. And so where should they go to learn more?
Well, from a Hughes perspective, Hughes.com is our overall company website for the defense-specific technologies, defense.hughes.com. We also have a Twitter handle, at Hughes Defense, and LinkedIn sites. So we've got plenty going in social media today.
I was at your Twitter account this morning, and I saw a couple hashtags combined. One hashtag was resilient, and the other hashtag was ISR, Intelligence Surveillance Reconnaissance. I mean, this probably hits on some of the listeners right in the nerve there, isn't it? It says, yes, we want intelligence. It has to be resilient, and it can't go down. I mean, that hits a lot of things. So that Twitter feed brings up a lot of the topics that you talked about today, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And we've got a lot of focus on ISR, particularly in the airborne community. We're also doing a lot to get size, weight, and power down. That is really key as you get to the individual soldier. They're carrying so much right now, you know, let alone having to carry a communications device. So we make some very small man-packable terminals that are fairly unique, using some very innovative waveform and antenna technology that involves the individual soldier to get some fairly high-speed communication to them.
It's all theoretical here in the nice air-conditioned studio, and we're talking about this. But my son has a friend in Special Forces. His name's Lansing. And Lansing never tells me where he's been or where he's going. I figure he's a problem with geography. But suppose Lansing is on the ground somewhere and needs to carry something. All of a sudden, it gets real human here, doesn't it? And so Hughes can make sure Lansing has 5 pounds less in his pack. It's going to make his life a whole lot easier.
Yeah, that's by far probably the most challenging problems out there, and those people do some pretty amazing things. Not knowing, you know, where they're going to be can make it a little bit more of a challenge from a managed services model, but it is still doable, as we generally know the hot areas of the world, and we can make sure that we've got coverage in those areas. And then, as I said, work to get that size, weight, and power down so they're not carrying such a heavy load.
Size, weight, and power, it also applies to the physical satellite itself, too.
Yeah, we're seeing now small sats, really just too big, not much bigger than your fist. These are being launched by all kinds of organizations. You're seeing a lot of LEO constellations being talked about. Hughes itself has a mobile sat group that does Inmarsat terminals. We've done Thuraya terminals. We are working on the next generation of what is called GlobalStar. So these are global systems that, you know, if you're in the middle of the oceans, and I've been there sailing my boat, your connectivity can be somewhat limited at times. You're going to see that increase over the next couple years radically.
You ever work with a company called Kratos, K-R-A-T-O-S?
Yes, we know Kratos and RT Logic very well. They make some nice equipment.
And what I've noticed is in the satellite industry, there may be just 10 vendors instead of 100 vendors, but each one of the vendors goes so deep in so many different areas, you know, all kinds of specific expertise.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've enjoyed about it. It's a very small and it's a very tight community. So you've got the bandwidth providers, the Hughes, the Intelsats, the Inmarsats out there, the equipment providers, which Hughes also does, and then the managed services providers. I think one of the things Hughes offers is we do everything. We make the equipment. We manage the satellites and we manage the service. And in doing that, it teaches us a lot about what the end user needs.
Especially when it comes to users in the federal government who have very, very specific high demands. And I'm going to, you know, there's people in the military here we're talking about.
Yeah, I think the key is to get down to the user level to make sure you understand, you know, what the requirement is. And requirements definition has probably been another of the challenges that the military faces, because it can change quite rapidly. And if you've got an acquisition cycle that runs 5 to 7 years, the requirement may change. So we've got to figure out a way that we can... the old term was spiral some of these things, or get enhancements, particularly in communication systems, because the technology is changing, you know, at least every 3 to 5 years. And by the time your system is out there, it's obsolete. So how can we upgrade that quickly?
In project management, what you're taught to do is actually go face-to-face with the end user and figure out exactly what the end user wants. I think what Hughes has done with some of these products is you've gone face-to-face with the end user. This could be a special forces guy in a mountain somewhere and figure out how they can carry things in a lighter, less power, more flexible package. It really takes is almost like applied satellite communications.
Yeah. Size, weight, and power, as I said, is extremely critical. And I think another very hot area over the next couple of years is going to be in battery technology, because unfortunately you've got a lot of these people carrying around a lot of batteries these days. So you may want to consider a show on that. It's another fascinating area.
Well, if we had Elon Musk in the studio, he would talk about his innovations in satellites and in batteries, too. I mean, there's a guy who's hitting both of those, isn't he?
Yeah, batteries launch. We're seeing a lot with SpaceX and some companies like that. And really, we're starting to see it now in our recruiting. You're getting a lot of young people that are interested in space and satellite communications again. And that's what drove me into the industry, and I'm glad to see it happening again.
I think I mentioned earlier that if you go to Google Trends and type in satellite launch, you get a hockey stick of interest. And it was last March. I mean, there must have been some satellite launch. But that also happened in the late 60s as far as technology goes as well. It was a lot of new things. A lot of things were coming. So we talked about the 1960s, about today. What about 5 years from now? Where's the satellite business going to be in 5 years?
Well, you're going to see speeds continue to increase, you know, particularly as we transmit video. I mean, it's... it's challenging to keep up. I don't think we would have envisioned the type of speeds required today. And I think in particular, the military is at a disadvantage in some of their estimates of the amount of speed and capacity they're going to need. I mean, we're seeing it on the commercial side. It's not going to be any different on the military side to recruit in a young soldier, airman, marine. They're used to growing up with their phones and instant connectivity, and you're going to need to be able to maintain that in the military.
It's almost expected. You know, one complaint that companies have today, I work with a lot of small technology companies, talk about videos, and they say, well, we should have done videos 5 or 6 years ago. And I say, well, if you remember 5 or 6 years ago, you had certain limitations to what you could see in your phone. You couldn't see many videos at all. And I think what's happening is people just expect to have a smartphone and see the video, the amount of bandwidth it needs to have a video. And this is what's going to happen in the future. They're going to expect things that is a matter of course we can do this. I mean, why not? Why shouldn't everyone in an aircraft carrier have this much bandwidth available 24/7?
Yeah, I think bandwidth, other trends, you're going to see, I think, starting an explosion in artificial intelligence, data analytics we're already seeing. You know, is there a way to reduce some of that data that's being transmitted? That would be helpful. I think UAVs and, unmanned systems are going to continue to be important. We're going to more robotics. And all of these things are going to be connected with communication technology. Same thing commercially with what they call IoT, the Internet of Things, and that gives some great capabilities, but also presents some challenges to the military.
I do a lot of master ceremonies things, and Tableau Software had me do the master ceremonies, and had 1,200 people in the audience, and the slides jammed. And so they said, go up there and talk to the audience for a few minutes, John. Give us 5 minutes. So I was up there, and I said, okay, show of hands. How many people use data visualization for finance? I had these hands. How many people are going to use it for geospatial? And I had 20% of the audience just talking about geospatial. And I was amazed at that, because 5 years ago, that wasn't true. Look at that change in satellites. I mean, it's a major change. It's really a huge change.
Yeah, and you're seeing that move to what was typically a government agency. There'd be NGA or those type of organizations to, you know, commercial satellites that are imagery satellites now owned by Google and others that are, you know, selling these this imagery for commercial reasons. And you can see how useful it is.
But there's a company in Ireland called The Radiant Group. And this is the hot spot for college kids now to intern at. They'll give the right arm to be able to intern at a geospatial company where they can learn this stuff and go, wow, these satellites are cool. I got this image here, and I can draw these conclusions from this image. And it's the cool factor's gone way up in satellites.
Yeah, it has, particularly in the applications. We try to make sure also that we're recruiting the people that really are deep in the technology, the communication theory, and that type of thing to develop what we call waveforms that are much more efficient. They use less bandwidth. They have a degree of resiliency or anti-jam capability to them. And Hughes has got some really deep roots in those areas.
Oh, so do you. Talk about waveform and radio frequency. That's where it all started for you, wasn't it?
Back in RF,
waveform. So we start off at waveform. I'm going to end up here at waveform. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Rick Lober, Vice President, General Manager, Defense and Intelligence Systems Division at Hughes Network Systems. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, Managing Partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.